You're listening to the third installment in a series of conversations I had with my friend Joel Bristol. Actually, they all took place in about 12 to 15 hours. 3.5 hours one night, an hour and a half the following afternoon. If you haven't had a chance to listen to episode 53, where he talks about the death of his father spent the last year of his life with Joel before he passed to pancreatic cancer. Episode 54 talks about Joel's thoughts on being a biracial child in America, product of a white mother and a black father, and how that has influenced his perspective on life. This episode, I really wanted to hammer him down on his relationship with his in-laws. He's got a white girlfriend and white in-laws who are from a small town in South Carolina. I think Joel's got a real opportunity there to educate and elucidate and to transform some people. In him, I see the schism, the basic schism of America, black and white. Literally, it's 50% of his body, each side. And I think if he can somehow affect change in them, or at least start a conversation that can go on a deeper level, he's got an opportunity to sort of, in his own way, realize the dream that we're all waiting on. Among other things, we talk about, again, facing in-laws who might not agree with you politically, the responsibility of moderate white adults to address their own ignorance or misgivings about non-white folks. We talk about the good Negro that he is, and my argument that it's not enough to be a good Negro. We've got to teach, we've got to educate, and we've got to change lives and minds. We talk about whiteness from a global perspective, specifically how the rest of the world might look upon it from afar because of the spread of Americanism and Western thought, but also up close from the perspective of, for example, international students who he played with and coached in college. But we start off the conversation here talking about policing. Joel was a criminal justice major and had thoughts about going into the police and military based on his family's history. So he's got a lot to say about that. What I'm saying is, if you wear a blue uniform and you see another dude in a blue uniform do something fucking wretched, say something.
Yeah.
This silence kills us, literally.
You're expecting one of those slaves to their own system to buck the system. You might get one or two blow the whistle, but it's never going to be enough. And then even the people you're blowing the whistle to are just as, if not more, racist. So who do you tell? Who do the police tell if they're the ones doing it? You see this in the movies. Like every possible corruption is always played out in some film a million times over. You go to the boss, you go to the chief says, you understand what this would do politically, and you know I got people in high places watching what's going on, or you know this could ruin an election, or this could end someone's career, or this could open a whole can of worms, and Eternal Affairs will be in here, and like whatever they stand, that's what happens. So you're told, they end up just turning the other cheek, or they just get fired, and they're not important enough to anybody to care. No, it doesn't get in the news, like. We think the whole department's gonna get fired. You get whole videos of people being murdered. Even if they do get found guilty, they're let off, or they're not, or they're charged but they're not convicted. A whole town of Baltimore, whatever, Ferguson riot, dude. That's, once the steam clears, what? Same thing. Nobody's fired. Maybe a new guy's appointed, but no legislation changes. No, nothing really changes. The problem with policing, even before the people, is the training. They're trained to be less, like, use less discretion and be more violent and escalating than the military is. And their entire sort of idea of the military is war, is to kill or be killed, in a word. Worst comes to worst, war is fighting, is war. Policing is supposed to be a service or a protection or whatever, domestic protection, whatever. Their entire, and this is what I study, and this is what I get into, like, when people, like, with my mom and things like that, or anybody, not even just my mom, I literally got sick of this shit. Studying, reading it, writing papers, doing my undergrad in this particular, the statistics of policing, the subculture of policing. There is a whole, the blue line that they don't cross. Like, it's the same thing. Once you buy into a brotherhood, you're into that.
It's a gang.
It's a gang. And there's even the literal, not even this like nuance, and the literal training of how they do. It's always rinse in their clips. They're never going to shoot boom, boom, boom. It's always every single cop there. If there's 20 cops there, one fires, all 20 are firing every bullet they have. They just totally lose any even reason or common sense. Like, you've now fired on one person 84 times, and now you go up to his bleeding body, handcuff it, and say, or as you approach, get your hands up, don't move, stop moving, show us your hands, show us your, he's literally, people, this is the one that just makes me so furious, is every video, even if the person was psycho and deserved it, they handcuff dead bodies.
That gets me even before that, whenever they get there, and I get it. Look, I get what adrenaline is. You chase somebody, even like the stuff they'll show with police chases in LA, they get them out of the vehicle, the person has their hands up, five of them will jump on somebody, get them on the ground. Okay, I get it. There's adrenaline. You've got to get
it. 10 people on top of it. Like,
so I'm not even concerned about that. That's you have a bunch of adrenaline. You want to say that, you know, like it's like a, What are those races in Florida? The greyhounds that chase the rabbit? Yeah. You want to get to the rabbit? No problem. No problem. I can understand that because of the adrenaline. Human adrenaline. What the one that gets me, and again, I've not done enough searching to know why I don't hear more people talking about this. But when you see those videos, the videos that we can all think about right now, the cop always gets on top of a person, really a black man, and the first thing they'll say is stop resisting. Three people are on top of the person.
Knee to the neck.
And they will always say that. No, stop resisting. And they'll be loud about it. Stop resisting.
It's like the
stop
kid.
Resisting.
It's the kid in practice who yells out that you fucked up the touch, right, just for coach to hear you because he wants a star.
Correct.
It's in the, you know, they're saying it just for the camera.
Correct.
Stop resisting. Stop resisting. Oh, what, is he resisting? Yeah, he's resisting. Yeah. And you're on both of my arms, and the third guy's on my neck saying, give me your hands. Right. Punching me in the rib cage saying, stop resisting. They get their rocks off, they do the thing. And it's all, dude, again, there are noble men who literally have this idea, and it's like Jackie Chan and Rush Hour, like, my dad was killed by a cop and a criminal. All my life I wanted to make him proud and be a cop. And they're the most noble, mm-hmm, policing, and they're the ones that get the cat out of the tree and take
the
old ladies.
Call out the other ones, man. Call them out.
And then, but there's literally, like, just these whole scores of kids who literally, they like, I just don't get it.
They grew up in Bishopville. Like, they've never met a black person.
There was
anybody.
As a person, there's no training that could make you not fear something that all your life you have associated with fear. Big black men get approached by 18-year-old rookie police officers with a gun. They could sneeze towards them and they would be sincerely frightened. Like, they know that if this man wanted to, he could beat the dog shit out of me. So right away, gun is out, and I'm like, and that's why every time, what's the one with the lady killed the guy right in the middle of the road, he's getting out of the car, and they tell him to go for it. The lady is like, imagine some young chick, and it's a big black dude. She's gonna be petrified. Adrenaline's pumping. They never fire once because they've lost all composure. Imagine now that sort of that lack of composure you take to the military, and we're making a tactical approach to something, and we're saying hold your fire, and here you go and kill the civilians. You're thrown in the brig. You got to fake court martial. You're AWOL. You're dishonorably discharged. for killing people in other countries who have established whole regimes to blow up America, terrorize, whatever, the fight the West. And this is your own citizens now. And they're training, not just the bad person, but they're literal training. Good people are being trained in ways that are like barbaric. Let's imagine America as the home of Barca and Madrid.
For those of you who might not know, there's two world-renowned soccer teams.
Barcelona and Madrid. Like, Gamecocks and Roll Tide. I mean, you name the rivalry. If the society is made up of white and non-white, as long as the population has a majority, there's going to be some kind. Like, there's going to be a problem. And when the majority is in power, then the policies, the government, whatever practices, they're not going to be suicidal. So even if they're somewhat neutral, they're never going to do harm to the white population. Do no harm. Like the medical school, like do no harm. At the very least, white policy in America, American legal policy will never do harm. And anything that's even threatened, anything that's too liberal, too open, too provides too much potential to the lower or the lesser number class, that's seen as doing harm to the majority. And I think that's where, to me, it just comes to a point where I'll take in the consciousness for my own benefit to know I'm not getting played, at least firsthand on the daily. There's a whole nother level of racism that I really don't see us overcoming unless there is like outright revolution. Now your radio is about to get like hacked and tapped now.
Island of Awesome! But the very best no MC can
take. The podcast that I enjoy listening to when it comes to talking about issues like this, Or just issues in general. I think people come back, and I want people to leave the end of an episode of a Ubuntu Radio podcast going, okay, it's good that I learned something, but I think people also want solutions, right? There is no solution to racism in America. You don't stop. KRS-One, rock on. Yes, yes, y'all. You don't stop. KRS-One, rock on. I'm about to hit you with that traditional style of co-rocking, giving options for head knocking non-stopping. And again, one of the reasons we started having this conversation many, many hours ago is about your experience, your identity as a biracial person in this country. You are, the word is not poster child, but let's say you are the embodiment of a conflict in America. The central conflict in America, and W.E.B. Du Bois said this about 100 years ago. He said the problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line. Well, the problem of the 21st century is a problem of the color line. It still exists. Blackness and whiteness. You have that going down the middle of your body. You have that going down on one side with your white mother and unfortunately a deceased black father. You have that in your white girlfriend. And I don't even know what would this slave term be for your son? I mean, your son, that's a good question.
He's a passable Negro.
What would you consider your son? That's a great question. So now we're getting into like, is he a quarter? Eighth, you know, he's one of those things.
My octoroon.
So he's an octoroon. So Aaron is a little octoroon.
It's bizarre. And again, that makes you take a whole nother perspective on how meaningless this color of skin is. But here, my dad is the blackest of black, and just two. My dad witnesses his grandson born white.
I'm probably gonna put a picture of your son not a picture of your son. I'm gonna include it in the. You know, every person I interview has a picture. So people will see that when they look at this. But my question is, so then you are the embodiment of the schism in America, the white and black schism in America. And again, people don't have these arguments because there are no solutions. They're not ready to just, like, we're just having the discussion now for hours because maybe it enlightens somebody, some darkness out there. Somebody goes, oh, and again, that starts them towards the road to
just change, because solution is never going to come. I'm sorry, America, it's just never going to come. And as a black man here, I accept that. This is not going to come. This ignorance is on a perpetual cycle. And whenever there are gains by the underclass, white privilege, white ignorance comes back and thwarts it. So, again, so you have this unique perspective. We started this discussion talking about your unique perspective. And so my question is then, offering solutions to people, or solutions as good as they might be, specifically about your family. Because now we have a mother who sometimes does or does not understand where you're coming from. You talked about uncles on her side, the white side of your family, that just... they're never going to get it.
Never going to get it.
Your girlfriend's parents who never even talk to you about these things. So then, how must you? Because we have to deal with this now again 100 years later. Now again 200 years later. Now again 400 years later. How must you approach? Because again, you said the onus is on us. They're not having these discussions. And they're not having these understandings because it's a psychological
and there's no
break,
pressure to.
And there's no pressure to.
Because if it stays how it is, they're good.
The onus is on us as the good Negroes to then teach white folks, because we always have.
And then,
Uncle Tom, down to Oprah. We are the standard bearers of the morality of America. So then, what must you do? I'm not even going to say what should you do. What must you do with your girlfriend's parents, with your mom's side of the family? What must you do? Because it ain't gonna be them, man. This is the black man's burden in America. It says 100 years ago or 110 years ago, Kipling talks about the white man's burden. The black man's burden in America is just to continually educate about what it means to be an American. That is all we ever do. The best of us have ever done. So best man, what are you gonna do? It's 2018, 2017 seemed to be the worst moral year in the history of this republic. So what are you gonna do for 2018, brother? Can't sit on the sidelines. You're an educated black man.
The most you can really hope to do is just rub off on one little person, at least
specifically your family.
With
your
mother, I just keep the dialogue going as much as I can. One by one, I'm sort of like enlightening her, like scenario by scenario. A lot of it is purely just educating her on, you know. Okay,
so she's part of this too.
In terms of
having to be educated.
Yeah, and on a political level.
Okay.
So on a personal level, she recognizes that people are hateful. She recognizes or has her own feelings about, you know, obviously she loved a black man. So there's a level, there is some physical, emotional barrier that's not there.
Right.
I almost feel bad at times when people, I know that their heart is clean, but there's only so many words for them to express it. So like with the thing with like, oh, I don't see color. That's the one that I think it's like, I have to be tolerant because I can't be like someone says, oh, well, if you don't see color, you don't see me. I've had to use that, but I don't necessarily feel like hurt by it. If someone says, oh, I don't see color, because I understand what they're trying to say.
Right.
I don't care that I'm not, look, if you are a bad person, I would tell you to fuck off. It doesn't matter that you are white or black or otherwise. That is the point they're trying to make, and I get it. But as long as you can make that point, if when you're asked, you can say, well, I don't mean it like that. Like, I recognize your individuality and whatever, the whole argument about why you should see color, because I'm colored. So if you don't see color, you only see what? You don't see me. I think it's like case by case, like, but it's on like a political sort of statistical way. Like, I'm like, it's specific, like, cases where I'm saying, like, oh, like, this is what happened in that case, mom. Like, no, like, I understand what you're saying. Or sometimes it gets a little deeper and I had to tell it, like, look, this isn't just conspiracy. I will pull up the census from X year to this year And although there was this many arrests and blah, 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 there's this many black people in jail. Or every time that they're stopped, if the gun is drawn, if it's on a black person, it's emptied. And if it's on someone else, they're peacefully arrested or whatever it is. There's always a little bit of resistance because sometimes the ideas are so... You're exposing something. But it's not so much. I think she trusts my intellect. For the most part, she's open. And I think she trusts my mind. She respects my mind. So as much as she might be skeptical, she's also very considerate of what I say to, you know, as being truthful or right or informed, at least. With April's parents, I don't ever really see that conversation coming up. I think that just sort of just washes through. I know they see the stuff I post on Facebook.
So the onus is not on them. You know it's never going to come up with them. But I think a part of you wants to have this conversation.
I want
to
say, yo, what problem? Like, why were y'all so worried about April being with me? Because I was black.
Okay,
like,
here's this. What? They're going to listen to this. You're talking straight to them right now. Yeah. Say it. Go ahead. Start the conversation. You're like, talking to them like, right now. What? They're listening right now.
Well, again, the part of it is I don't even need to ask. I know already.
You have to ask.
They found out their daughter was dating a black man. If all their stereotypes about black men were positive, there would have been no problem. If they had had a neighbor who was black, a young black kid who was a positive little kid, and at least gave them the idea that it's possible for a positive black man to exist, they wouldn't have been immediately skeptical or disappointed. I get the sense that it's like, there's this point that a lot of like white parents want to articulate, and I hear this a lot in Hartsville, because it's a small place, especially bartending, where I'm not racist and I don't have a problem with black people, they're gray, blah, blah. I just don't want they try to make it seem like how royal families are very selective of who their daughters go with. The options are all white, but even if it's only white people, then it's race isn't an issue. It's still, you know, as a parent, you want them to be with someone who has the potential to be very successful. But on that, I say, okay, well, what about black people limits their potential? So like it's like
you're perpetuating the thing that you fear.
Exactly. Again, even with them, her parents are very old school. I know that they wouldn't necessarily have the vocabulary to articulate it would always come back down to some like generalized thing. Oh, well, it's America and everybody can, you know, I have a right to my opinion, or they like some alternative fact that could like justify it or something. At the end of the day, they didn't really do me much because we never interacted really. And now that we do, it's very limited. I have this issue sometimes. April thinks that I'm being antisocial, but I don't like hold the grudge actively, but it's like I know that deep down, they have these feelings that they might not be hateful. And like, what responsibility does an adult have? Not just them, but in general, white adults in America have to address their own ignorance. Like, it's not my responsibility to teach them.
But they'll never teach themselves.
They'll never teach themselves. So if I care to make a change, I have to teach them. I don't like to villainize white skin the way black skin is, because it's not necessarily... What if all white people were purple? It's just a matter of party. It's politics. I might live and die in this sort of struggle, but there has to be a point where either God comes and it's the rapture, or it's just a season, you know, and we're the Jews in Egypt. The similarities between like biblical stories and myths and whatever it is, you could plug in Trump's name to Pharaoh and then, you know, call it what you want. And any other dictator for that matter, when there's a people in power and a people struggling.
So Fact is, when people always tell me, well, we're in the end times, my argument is, anytime there's a conflict like that, people could say World War II was the end times. And before World War II, nobody had seen anything as devastating as World War I. So mm-hmm. people going through the teens, the 19-teens, would have said, okay, that is the end of the world. So no matter what era you're in, whatever the big discord is, it always leads to the analogy of this being the end times. And people say, well, these are the end times. No, it's not. At any point in history, there were a group of people who always said is going to be the end times. I'm sure in 1999.
And eventually an end came.
Correct.
But not necessarily an end as to maybe they thought.
Into
that way of being, I guess.
But getting back, I'm gonna stick you to this. What are you going to do if white ignorance is not something that they can...
For me personally, I just...
2018, for the sake of your son. You're now in the family, Joel.
Just be more...
You're in their family.
What I don't try to do... Or what I don't hope to do is get to a point where I'm like, well, it's never gonna change, so I just like lose my passion for it.
But in a sense, isn't that what's happening? If you say you're not gonna go down to get out of their place,
at some point. I have to live my own life. And it's a case where I'm almost like, even with this thing with like policing, I'm tired of talking about it. I don't think me talking about it is going to do very much. And a lot of people that I'm talking to are the people who are friends on my Facebook. And I would think those are people who I've already got on my side. Unless they're, again, like my own family following me and being, you know, on the opposite side of the fence. But it's a case where I just hope that I'm prepared to confront head on any racist encounter, be it verbal, physical, whatever. Just be prepared. Just be prepared, because maybe I can't go out and like revolutionize the world, but when it comes to me, be prepared to destroy it.
So are you given any pause or any thought to, or are you concerned? For example, Aaron's 5 years old. He goes and spends 2 weeks with grandma and grandpa.
And learn some ignorant ass shit. Absolutely. Correct.
So then,
and it may not be intentional. It's not like they're teaching
hate.
But
I'm saying then, shouldn't there be a conversation between you and his grandma? Don't
to say,
teach
hey,
this shit to my...
Yeah, I've had that conversation too. And then it's sort of a case where like, as his mother, what line does my girlfriend have to draw between me saying, I don't want your parents influencing my kid? As much as they might love him, blah, 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 like... Again, that's gonna. You're absolutely right. There's gotta come a point where I have the conversation. Like, look, this is what I believe. This is what I stand for. And in the effect of a grandparent, great people. They're supportive financially, emotionally, all that. And again, this is the weirdest confliction. Is like within America.
This
like,
is America.
This is
why we gotta talk about
they're
it.
They're the most moral, conservative, ethical. Balance, you know, working, hardworking, blue collar, you know,
salt of the earth, Americana,
just normal ass people, kind people.
But they're morally bankrupt when it comes to
when it comes to a racial issue. When it comes to knowing about black people, they're just totally void. People can't appreciate black culture because they don't understand black culture. And so
imagine
who get black culture don't get it.
Imagine that. I'm just supposition. In the next 10 years of Aaron's life, that you're working on this project called.
What if he doesn't even feel what I feel because he never gets that look because his skin's not black?
That was my point. That's my question then. The fact that when they parade him around, who's to say they're not saying he's a white child? Who's to say because he does not look... I'm hoping...
In the hospital, you don't have the choice.
You're kidding me.
This says white.
In the world in general, and more specific to America, the white population is not growing. Mm. Other populations are growing, so the birth rate. This could be part of that.
Just to list
as white. So that's when we started this conversation going, what do you pick? Oh, I would pick black. I've never been in your situation, so...
Yeah. What do I do?
All right. Damned if I do. Damned if I don't. You know I got a girl back home. You got a man, what you want? What you want? What these bitches want from a nigga? Want some DMX shit? I know them other niggas love tricking. Want some BMX shit, but not me. Now I'm sure you done heard about me. A black star, most deaf quality. Good, so them bad hoes try me. They try me. This is Martin Luther King in the club, getting dubs. With a bad bitch in his ear, saying she down for whatever. In the back of his mind is Coretta, and she knows. She knows, and I know she knows, and I know she knows, and deep down she knows. She knows, and I know she knows, and I know she knows. Well, alright.
Kind of talking about this idea under the umbrella of the Good Negro. I'm trying to build an argument for the need to talk to Joel's in-laws, who are white, from a small town in South Carolina.
About the elephant in the room.
About the freaking elephant in the room, race. He's a biracial man who identifies as black. Am I putting words in your mouth? That we accept, we can state that. Who identifies as black. He's with a white lady, young white lady. They're both 26 years old. They've got a new son who, from all appearances, he's blonde-haired. What color eyes?
Blue.
So he could pass. He could, for the rest of his life, more probably pass. He could probably do it. I'm not too sure. I don't know, but
no, absolutely.
He could probably do it. And then
I'm trying to pass as his dad. Yeah, that's the challenge.
And then Joel's in-laws are, well, may not be the most woke folk in the world. And I think it is not good enough. Joel's obviously a good man. He's doing right by his by April, by his son. He's going to continue to do that. But I don't think that is enough. The idea of just being the good Negro and these people will learn and maybe change their mind. My argument right now, my conceit right now, it ain't good enough. And so we've been going back and forth about that. So enlighten these people here on my podcast about where you stand on that, where it was like, I don't want to get into it with these people. And I'm at the same ilk right now with unwoke folk in general.
It just comes down to that they just lack cultural perspective. It's the same case. It's like, it could be totally good people, hardworking, ethical, whatever it is, when the discussion of race or social, race, class, and criminal justice, when that discussion is to be had, there's an extreme lack of cultural perspective. And for me, even to have the, you're saying to have the discussion, I think there's really, it's very limited in what could come from that, because I don't embody all of black culture. Anything not white is what they need perspective on and to develop an appreciation for. So I could show them whatever little bit of culture that I possess and they feed off that. But I think you have to be like submersed in culture. You have to have a personal attachment to a diverse set of people, different ranges of skin tone at least, to get over that, like the visual sort of stigma that they associate with black people or blackness. Just talking to them, I could give them my perspective, my testimony, or just show them that I'm a good Negro, but it's still very limited. They would need to see like every style, every type, every shade of black people, black culture to develop an appreciation for it.
In getting onto the subject that the good Negro is gonna be torn down regardless the minute he does one half of a thing that's considered wrong or taboo or maybe white not even wrong
proof.
In a sense.
White people need proof. White society needs proof that we're good, that we're not a threat, that we don't want revenge. If we were to find overall equality, I mean, I think they want proof, and it's trust but verify. And then as soon as if something goes wrong, it could be the same happenstance that would befall any person of any color. When it happens to a black person, well, it's I told you so. That wasn't just chance. That was just in you the whole time.
If no matter what happens in me as a man, being a human being, a flawed human being at that, if I'm going to get castigated and brought down and lumped in with the worst of my people, no matter what I do, why not fucking go out blazing? I'm saying confront these parents a little bit.
There's a way to be diplomatic. Like, there's a way to be
being the good Negro and then having them having them learn, oh, Joel Bristol, he's one of the good ones. So if he's one of the good ones, I can extrapolate. Well, there must be other good ones out there. That is not enough for me anymore. It is not enough for me anymore. Even though they're 50 or 60 or 65 years old, they're on their last quarter of their life. Who are they going to teach? Who are they going to pass this information on to? Not a whole lot of people. But I think just them in their minds going, oh, Joel's a good one. That's not good enough. But if we need them to talk to other people. And to talk to other people, I think a conversation has to be had. Hard conversation.
They couldn't be honest with me. I don't think white people can be brutally honest with a black person about how they really feel, because they would, I think, almost be embarrassed with themselves. There's a point where you can't have this discussion and not be a sane individual and realize the contradiction in your way of thought or the wrongness in your perspective, that you have like an almost instinctive fear of black skin or black people or disdain for or like negative judgment of a prejudice, you know, about blackness or anybody of color. And it's so illogical, but then in every other way, you're so rational, reasonable, moral, ethical. And I think before they come to that, I think they start to like almost smell it coming. And then they shut off, they evade, they'll escape the conversation, they'll resort to these like, oh, well, that was in the past. Oh, you weren't a slave. Oh, I didn't own slaves. Or, the whole list of cliche, I voted for Trump statements. I mean that, well, just because I voted for Trump doesn't mean I'm racist or that. It's almost like with psychology, you do the researching, and like I struggled at one point with like this concept of nothing really proves anything when you get stats. It's all correlation. So when you say, oh well, does having a single parent home cause criminality in kids? You can't say that. Mm-hmm. Because there are a million kids who had that upbringing and did not get into crime. But when you look at the bigger picture, it is correlated. Certain sociological factors are correlated with these other negative things. Mm-hmm. Crime, poverty, whatever it is. So for whatever reason, whiteness is correlated with racism. Every time you get to the thing, I think it's come to a point where white people, you get down to the conversation, you create a space to have the conversation. It could be going well, but there has to come a point where it's almost like an intervention where they accept, I need help, and they're like a willingness, and you can't create that. You almost feel like there's a point where there's like the whole stage of waking white people is where the first time you tell them they need help, yo, you need help, you're an addict, you're addicted, you need help. It's an insult. And so the conversation, I think, stops there. And then maybe you have to come back to it. And then frankly, on a real level, I just don't interact with them. You know, going back to her parents, I don't interact with them or any middle-aged Trump voting white people on such a level that frequently to have this conversation. They would have to be willing to come out of their way in their own time to go to some conference, some talk, some roundtable discussion to put themselves in that. Yo, you wanna get involved. This girl walking in the ghetto. Looking good but looking down. What you say, come on by. Said she needed inspiration. I said get your shit, cause we're going uptown. Uptown, baby, uptown, say what. I could tell she was feeling better. Yeah, yeah, come on, yeah. But she got inside the car. She got inside the car. She was a dark skinned girl with pretty cornrows. She was doing her best to try to hide her scars. Say, come on, what you say now? I thought about that about a year and a half ago. I went to a screening of a movie with a white guy who, I think he's from North Carolina, goes around and sort of examines his own prejudice and has conversations with people about why am I thinking this way. And it was done at a church in Cary. And in
We then broke off into sort of roundtable discussions, about 8-9 people, after we all saw the movie. And it was myself, my son, and another black woman. She was a teacher at a table, and there were about 6 or 7 other folks. There was one young girl, high school, and the rest were about middle age. But the level of just, let's call it for what it is, ignorance, on the part of the white folks at the table who had no, like, this was news to them. That blew me away. That you could go 40, 50 years and somebody telling you, yeah, this is a natural feeling. Most of us feel this way. And we need to actually do something about this was kind of news to them. Or the statistics that may have come out in the Ava DuVernay's movie 13. The statistics for the incarceration rates for black men and the historical lineage of that and the direct correlation between the need for labor following the abolition of slavery. So what do? You arrest people and you force them to work. It's slavery, it's the same thing. And we continually do that and do that to a certain percentage of the population. Not a certain percentage of the population, a certain color of the population. And it's like, this is news to y'all? My son is 13, 14 years old, and he knows this. He recognizes this. He sees this. That just blew my mind. It just, the level of it. So where are these discussions gonna be had, if not with you? Last night we talked about the fact that unfortunately the onus for the discussion of race in America is on black people, because white people are not gonna have this discussion among themselves.
There's no pressure to. If it stays as it is, they'll be good.
So what do we gotta do? Yo, he wanna get involved. Nice. What do you got to do? You're in the situation. I'm told you are the epitome of the racial divide in America. You're half black, you're half white. Your girlfriend is white. Half of your family's white. Your mom's white. Half of your family's white. Your friends are black. Your dad is black. And this discussion that needs to be had, like on a national level, you whittle it down. And your family and your particular situation is the microcosm of this country. And so what needs to happen? What are you willing to do? Because the discussion needs to happen. Or else we see this cyclical reoccurrence of the antebellum South, the rise of the Klan, the rise of hate. This stuff happened after the Civil War when black people were making gains. Well, white America felt, as seen by the election of Donald Trump, that black people were making gains. Ah, we can't have that. So the Klan came up. We're going to destroy it. Alt-right, call it whatever you want. They come up around the same time under the same circumstances. And the word you use, there's a correlation between the historical events and the reaction to the events. So then what happens in the late 1800s? Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, and people who start attacking this idea of white supremacy in two different ways. So we're at that point now. If we look at the historical lineage, Civil War, antebellum South, black people making gains, we're in the legislature. Actually, America for a couple of years, is at least in the South, is being America. If you can get it done in politics or whatever, you can get it done. And then people said, no, we want the way it was. And so this movement springs up after that. Booker T, W. Du Bois, really conscious talk about race. So my point in saying that is that's what's next. Really conscious, nuanced thought about race, and you're intelligent enough to be part of that conversation. So how do you start it, man? I refuse to talk to a certain segment of the population who will never, I just refuse to believe they'll ever get it. They will never get it. I'm done with it. And again, they say that's part of the problem in politics in America today. It's so fractured. Like you go on Facebook and you have your friends and they're your friends. You chose them to be your friends because they believe what you believe. And there are people on the other side who have their friends. And so people only have these small conversations in their small circles. So there's no overlapping of ideas except that shouting matches and comments on Facebook and you block somebody and nothing really ever happens. But you are that space. Your life is literally that space. So that, I mean, that's what I see when I say that the conversation has to be had in not a soft way. There's some medium between soft and confrontation, because they will always fear and back away from confrontation, even though it's just facts that I'm getting you. Facts are too much. Facts are like rain and they feel like they're going to drown. any mention of racism in America to a certain segment of the white population is an attack on their individuality. It's an attack on their family. And we discussed
because you're associating them with something negative.
And again, negativity is the bastion of the non-white people in this country. In their minds, anything negative is non-white. 3 K's, 2 A's in America. I'm just a black space born out the nebula. And everything I do or say today is worthwhile. With assurance by your action and your first child, I begin my first now. Sometimes I speak and I feel like it ain't my words. Like I'm just a vessel channeling inside this universe. I feel my ancestors arrested inside of me. It's like they want me to shoot my chance and change the society. But how do I go about it? Tell me where I start. My destiny rerouted when I chose to follow heart. You told to follow suit, but tell me what it do for you, except where you down. Now you trapped inside the cubicle they built for us. The first step in the change is to take notice. Realize the real gains that they try to show us. 300 plus years of them cold shoulders. The 300 million of us still got no focus. Sorry, America, but I will not be your soldier. Obama just wasn't enough, I need some more closure. And Donald Trump is not equipped to take this country over. Let's face facts, cause we know what's the real motive.
I transform, ay, I am the wisdom of the fallen. I'm the youth, ay, I am the greatest, ay, this is the proof, ay, I work hard, pray hard, pay dues, ay, I am the truth, ay, I transform, ay, I am the wisdom of the fallen. I'm the youth, ay, I am the greatest, ay, this is the proof, ay, I work hard, pray hard, pay dues, ay.
What if other young men my age, my peers in another country, they've been in, you know, what other country with what other political and social issues going on, totally unbiased about America, could give a shit about America, or could give a shit about black or white, they're neither, and they could care less, it doesn't affect them. What is their perspective? And it's funny because in my experiences, they fully recognize the idea of, like, the ruthlessness of America.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get to America, they realize, well, shit, even internally, that ruthlessness is apparent. And I think with them, like, so we'll go, there was a time I went to a bar and, like, white people will share stuff with other white people and not realize that white person is from Europe or South African. Right. I had a student, one of my players was South African, and he would always jokingly say, I'm African. And again, was a good, positive, very nice young man who would actually have those conversations with me and, like, on a historic, like, talk about history and of him being from South Africa. But yeah, it's funny, like, I don't think that white people in America recognize that the world sees what's going on. And the whole rest of the world, though, there's a lot of white in the world that is on the same tip. They're not all, like, the whole rest of the world. And again, I've never really investigated the world demographic, but non-white people are the majority.
Correct.
In the world. So whether or not we agree with America's politics, and if the Middle East or any other non-white country with some power in global politics, they could very well say, look, well, we'll let America burn. They can black and white, they can kill each other, we could care less because it's not our problem. But I feel like the narrative is always the same. Will Smith always opposite Latino girls. They only see you how they want to see you till you make them see you in some other way. I'm tripping off the other day, cause God knows what these white kids say and do. You're not racist cause the wires in your Netflix queue. Subtle racism, it's hard to pin it cause you'd only understand if you were me for just a minute. America is the asshole, and the face of America is not black. So any way you split it, globally, domestically, a white face perpetrated the worst of the worst, by and large. Warriors, we all need senseis. Change everything that we've done so far. How me make BET, TER? I mean, just the way that we see each other. How won't stop until they say James Franco is the white Donald Glover. Yeah, these niggas wanted cookie, but instead I gave them Loch Ness. Sick boy for life, my swag is in the hospice. Aiming for the throne, Jay and Ye said to watch that. They asked me what I'm doing, and I said I'm stealing rock back. I am back. The truth, ay, I transform, ay, I am the wisdom of the fallen. I'm the youth, ay, I am the greatest, ay, this is the proof, ay, I work hard, pray hard, pay dues, ay, I am the truth, ay, I transform, ay, I am the wisdom of the fallen, I'm the youth, ay, I am the greatest, ay, this is the proof, ay, I work hard, pray hard, pay dues, ay, I transform.
So what was the reaction in having those conversations with, again, you went to a college in South Carolina, small town South Carolina, where There were a lot of international students. Once they got here, and they're here for 4 years with a certain population, certain demographic, who all spew a certain ideology about blackness, about not really dealing with the realities of oppression from the perspective of the oppressed. They have a certain perspective. Once they got here, and they were here for 4 years, I'm interested to know, what did they think about that? The view that they brought here as freshmen.
Okay, so think now, if you're from, like, let's say Finland, or Russia, or wherever, there's no black people.
Mm-hmm.
There's none. You could have literally grown up 23, 21, 25 years and had never physically encountered a black human being other than on TV, computer, like, and that's insane. That seems insane to me. And that's the first, like, you know, like, oh, you're my first black friend. And maybe you didn't have the first black person they ever saw. They might have traveled and whatever, but that's a very good possibility that you're the first black person they've ever encountered personally for any even brief amount of time, face to face. But even then, the propaganda about blackness is what pervades the entire world. They'll make jokes and say, is this true that, like, black people are like, where the hell did you hear that if you never ran into a black person?
Right.
Or a TV show or whatever, and it's always some propaganda. So the conversations always start with that, is like, it's a curiosity about what they've seen as...
Is it real?
Something like, yeah, is this real? Like, it's almost refreshing because even if they're ignorant to black culture, it's almost an innocent one, and they're open. They're just a blank slate.
Open to some facts.
And again, there's people in America who say, oh, well, I was just asking a question. I said, but I swear to God, they know what they're asking. Your face is saying it. Like, there's a point where if you didn't look at the person, you heard them ask me the question, and you thought it was just some American regular kid from local, you'd look like, what? Like, don't be stupid. You know it's like that. Right. What do you mean? You know cops really press you if you're black and don't if you're white. And for them, you can tell there's like a sincere curiosity about it. But then it makes you, the point I'm trying to make is that, like, the whole world recognizes that. Even if they don't know what's going on, something's fucking wrong. You realize, like, that they're like, there's a whole set. Like, it's clear. Like, I don't know anything about America. I'm not American. I don't care. But you do see what I see, right? You see what I see? Like,
they're about,
like,
to make,
like,
you...
Absolutely, like, I do. And we've been here 500 years trying to say this. And they don't. And again, that could be an individual person. They could go back to Russia and you hear all the time about there being, you know, racism in general. And then, so there's a domestic level of racism, and then there's a global level of racism. I think America just sets the standard. But white America sets the standard. So even when the population gets to a certain point, that's when I feel like it starts to look like the Russian Revolution, where there's, like, literally so many people right outside the gate who are unrepresented, unpleased, mad, angry, and whatever. And there's a point where they would just, the power structure would just lock the gates, lock themselves in, and brace for World War III. And if they have to just press that button and blow everybody up, well, hell, we'll all die before you get this. I just say what I want, like I'm made for this. But I'm afraid some days I might be wrong. Maybe that's why me and Mike get along. Hey, not from the same part of town, but we both hear the same sound coming. Woo! And it sounds like war. Woo! And it breaks our hearts. When I started this band, are we at that point now? Not literally, but in terms of, we're building up institutions that have defined America. We're watching the disintegration of Rome.
Of Rome. We're watching the disintegration of everything that is touted as being specifically American. Our contribution to the politics of the world is the creation of a functioning democracy with checks and balances. And the people who are in power and the people who elected Donald Trump, the people who voted for him, the people who are maintaining, basically keeping the world from seeing the truth about what's going on and spinning it, they are undermining the very democracy that they purport to uphold by electing him and maintaining themselves in power.
And that's why they go back and be like, oh shit, well, we didn't need y'all. Like, when it was us, it was just us at the time. And then we went and got the slaves to build up the land that we came and conquered over the Indians. Like, so I really feel like if you went into, like, the highest of the highest one, if there's some white boogeyman, like people talk about, like, the Rothschilds and whatever it is, they will probably at some point just be like, look, I know it's wrong. I don't give a fuck. All is fair in love and war. I won. You lost. I run shit. Do something. I really feel like that's what it's down to. It's just a challenge. How fucking long will we just do it in your face? And coolest monkey in the jungle. And every other little fucking wave right under your nose, right in your face. A few of you get pissed, but not enough of you ever to fucking do anything about it. And even if you do get a little scared, that's just more evidence. We'll fuck you up. We killed him. We even killed the white boy who tried to help you out.
We have to create the problem to...
It's a challenge. Ultimately, it comes down to a challenge.
They have to...
The only resolution is either accept it and be ignorant and just be just know it and not do anything about it. Lay down and live as contently as you can. And again, I think white people are like, well, dude, you live and you big, you're in a house, you're fine. Why are you complaining? Just shut up and live. Just work and make your money. All right, you can either do that. But if there is a conscience in your head saying like, yo, you could be content, but not everybody is. Or even if you all were, there's still the spirit of evil, like, do something about it. Ultimately, I think white people in America are making peaceful change impossible, so making violent revolution inevitable. People who make peaceful change impossible make violent revolution inevitable.
So miss me with the whoopee woo. You take the devil for God, look how he doing you. I'm Jack Johnson, I beat a slave catcher, snaggle tooth. I'm Tiger Flowers with a higher power, hallelujah. Life gets so bad, it feels.
That's what it comes down to. And that's even on a conversational level. I find myself having these conversations and being red with like, how do you not fucking get this? How do you not understand?
That's why I refuse to have these conversations anymore.
So with me, before I blow up a friendship that was otherwise fine, let's just avoid that conversation. Don't disrespect me. Don't step on my toes. Don't say nothing out of pocket.
And then where's progress
harm,
then?
No harm, no foul.
Where's progress?
There is no progress. Just sustain. And if you say, well, if you're sustaining what it is, that's exactly what they want. And I say they. It's like, oh, the white man.
You touched on something, Rothschilds and cabal and people that are really pulling the strings. I don't buy any of that. And I do think it does come down to basic greed and individual interest. I've done this for my family. If my family and our name has been at the top of the riches for 300 years, this present generation of this family, Rothschild, Astor, Vanderbilt, whatever... We're not going to go down in history as the motherfuckers that lost the wealth and the legacy. So what do I have to do? I have to do whatever it takes to maintain our level of economic wealth, and that inevitably leads to political power. I don't think it's we're all in this together and these secret families are meeting and blah, 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 blah. I don't think it's any of that. It's just I want more. And I think you said that. I want mine.
Every dollar has a name to it. Like every piece of wealth has some name to it. And the people that ultimately... are at the top of the food chain have to converse. If you think about it on a real, they have to converse or cooperate or war. Someone has always got to be in control. Someone's always going to have to be at the top. It just so happens that in this cycle of human existence that it's white people. And the only way to delineate them from theirs is the looks, is the skin. So if you're non-white, you pose some threat, potential threat to them. So you're either benign or you're a cancer that they need to cut out or shut up.
Keep the devil off. Keep the devil off. Gotta keep the devil off. Keep the devil off. Keep the devil off. Can't worry about no snakes. What good
though? Thank you for making it through another episode of Ubuntu Radio. Be sure to stick around for episode number 56, the final installment of my conversation with Mr. Joel Bristol. And as always, visit the Ubuntu Radio podcast on podomatic.com or listen to us on iTunes. Please subscribe, leave some comments. The more you subscribe, the more comments you leave. I believe it helps getting us to the top of the list in our category on these podcast sites, so do that. If you haven't already, look back at some older episodes of our Ubuntu Radio podcast. I think they're good, worth listening to, especially if you liked what you heard here. But come on back. I look forward to your return visit to Ubuntu Radio. And in the meantime, We are out.
Keep the devil off. Gotta keep the devil off.
Keep the devil off.
Can't worry about no snakes.
No snakes.
What good, no riches.
No riches.